Hey everyone, welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Glad to be diving in again.
This is where we take a whole lot of information, boil it down, and just give you the essentials so you stay informed or maybe just feed your curiosity.
That's the goal.
Today, we're really plunging into some pretty intense human feelings. Doubt, despair, but also finding this amazing strength that sometimes pops up right when things are toughest.
Yeah, and the big question we're tackling is one I think resonates with a lot of people.
Which is?
How do you actually hold on to your faith when you feel completely forgotten, just totally overwhelmed by life?
That's a heavy one.
Yeah.
And to get at that, you mentioned we're looking at something specific.
We are. We're turning to an ancient prayer, Psalm 13. It's surprisingly short.
Okay.
But it's absolutely packed with profound wisdom for anyone, really, who's grappling with hard times. It's almost like a shortcut.
A shortcut. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, a shortcut to understanding how being radically honest, truly honest in your spiritual life, can actually transform things. Okay, so that's our mission for this deep dive then. We're going to unpack this powerful text, Psalm 13.
Get right into it.
Try to really grasp its core message, and then, importantly, explore how its insights connect directly to the challenges, the questions you might be facing in your life right now.
And see how it encourages us, maybe pushes us a bit?
Exactly. How this ancient wisdom can encourage us to lean into faith and maybe live more obediently to what we believe, even when it feels like the world's pushing back hard.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, let's jump right in. Psalm 13, often called a prayer for help in trouble.
And traditionally attributed to King David.
Right. And as you said, it's short, just 6 verses. But wow, the emotional punch it delivers. It's pretty incredible.
It absolutely is. You know, if you were to just quickly summarize it, David starts off feeling completely abandoned by God.
Utterly alone.
Yeah. Swamped by sorrow, feels like his enemies are closing in. And he's just crying out, pleading for God to intervene, to see him, to help him.
That sounds desperate.
It is.
Yeah.
But here's the fascinating part, the shift. By the very end, he makes this choice. He chooses to trust in God's mercy, his loving kindness.
Even though,
as far as we know, nothing has actually changed yet. His prayers haven't received an obvious, yes, it's quite an arc in just a few lines.
It really is an incredible emotional journey squeezed into such a small space. Let's break it down verse by verse, because that raw emotion just hits you from the start.
It does.
Verses 1 and 2. They just lay out David's deep despair, this profound sense of being forgotten. And he hammers it home, right? Repeating, how long? 4 times. It's like this desperate drumbeat.
It really is. He asks, how long wilt thou forget me, O Lord, forever? How long wilt thou hide thy face from me?
And then again.
How long shall I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart daily? How long shall mine enemy be exalted over me? It's relentless.
That repetition, how long? It's more than just words, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It perfectly captures that deep, gnawing sense of longing, of pain, and honestly, profound uncertainty. It's David just laying his soul bare.
Full vulnerability.
Incredible vulnerability. Mm-hmm. He's not just asking when the suffering will end. He's wrestling with whether it ever will.
Mm-hmm.
Has God actually turned away for good?
And what strikes me, too, is, like you said, the honesty, the sheer boldness of asking God these questions directly. So raw, so unfiltered.
Exactly. It challenges our perhaps neat and tidy ideas about prayer sometimes.
Right. He's just poured out his heart, shown the absolute depths of his despair. So, okay, what happens next? Does he just stay there? Does he wallow?
Why?
Or does something change?
It's fascinating because he doesn't stay there. He doesn't wallow. From that place of raw despair, David pivots quite quickly to a direct plea.
Okay.
In verses 3 and 4, he says, consider and hear me, O Lord, my God. Lighten mine eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death.
Wow. Lighten mine eyes. Like, give me hope. Let me see again.
Exactly. And he continues, lest mine enemy say, I have prevailed against him. And those that trouble me rejoice when I am moved. It's a really forceful plea.
You can almost hear the urgency. The stakes feel incredibly high for him here.
They couldn't be higher. He's pleading for God to step in because he genuinely fears death, complete defeat, lest I sleep the sleep of death.
Yeah.
And it's not just about him either. There's this sense that God's reputation is also on the line. He doesn't want his enemies gloating, claiming victory over him, because that would imply, you know, a victory over God's chosen one.
Right. It reflects on God, too.
So it's this urgent life or death cry for God to show up to act, almost challenging God in a way to be God.
But then, and this is the part that always gets me, after all that raw, desperate pleading, David takes this completely unexpected turn. A pivot.
Right there in verses 5 and 6.
He declares, But I have trusted in thy mercy. My heart shall rejoice in thy salvation. I will sing unto the Lord because he hath dealt bountifully with me. It feels almost sudden, doesn't it? From despair to trust and praise.
It is sudden, and that's what makes it so powerful. The significance of this shift is huge. He says, but I have trusted. Past tense, or maybe a settled state.
Yeah, like a decision made.
Exactly. He declares his trust, and he commits to rejoicing and singing before his circumstances have actually changed. He's still in the thick of it, still waiting for God to lighten his eyes.
So it's not based on things getting better first.
Not at all. He makes a deliberate, conscious act of faith. He remembers God's past faithfulness. He hath dealt bountifully with me, maybe recalling specific moments. And he chooses to cling to God's mercy, his loyal love, even while his present reality feels absolutely bleak.
It's a choice, not just a feeling.
Precisely. It's a decision of the will.
Okay, so we've walked through David's journey in these six verses, the despair, the plea, the pivot to trust. But what's the lasting message here? What timeless wisdom does this ancient prayer offer us today? Let's try and unpack some of those key insights.
The first one is just profoundly freeing. It's this. It is absolutely okay to question God honestly.
That opening line again.
Exactly. How long wilt thou forget me, O Lord, forever? It shows us that, you know, in ancient Hebrew faith, real faith wasn't about pretending everything was okay.
No stiff upper lip required.
Not at all. It wasn't about putting on a brave face all the time. A genuine relationship with God makes room for real, raw, even painful emotions and questions. It actually validates them.
And flowing from that, the second lesson seems to be that sorrow isn't a sign of spiritual failure or weakness.
Right. David openly admits to having sorrow in his heart daily. This tells us something important. Even the greats, kings, prophets, leaders experience deep darkness, emotional pain.
It humanizes them.
It does. And it validates lament, that act of bringing your grief, your complaint, your sorrow directly to God. It's not a failure of faith. It can be a really vibrant, authentic expression of faith.
That's powerful. Okay, what's the third one?
The third point builds right on that surprising pivot David makes. It's this. Trust can come before the rescue.
Trust in the dark.
Exactly. David shifts from despair to declaring, but I have trusted in thy mercy, before his situation gets better. This teaches us that faith isn't always about feeling good or seeing immediate results.
It's more stubborn than that.
It often is. It's a decision made while you're still waiting, a conscious choice to believe God's character, even when the circumstances seem to shout the opposite.
And the final piece of wisdom you pulled out.
It's about praise. Praise can actually be a path through the pain.
Not just something you do after the pain is gone.
Precisely. David says he will sing unto the Lord because God has dealt bountifully, recalling the past, projecting into the future, even while he's still waiting for deliverance now.
So praise isn't just a reward for victory.
No, it's shown here as a proactive spiritual discipline. Something you do that helps cultivate hope, that can shift your perspective even when you're still hurting. It's almost a defiant act of faith, isn't it?
A defiant act. I like that. Okay, so these are powerful ancient insights, but let's connect this to the bigger picture now. How does this ancient text, this psalm, really speak to our lives right now? What are the modern applications for you listening today?
That's the crucial question, isn't it? How does this land for us?
Well, I think the first big one, building on what you said, is the permission it gives us to normalize emotional honesty in our spiritual lives.
So important today.
Yeah, because there's often this this pressure, isn't there, to always look like you've got it all together faith-wise, to seem happy and untroubled, maybe especially in religious circles.
Definitely. A pressure to perform faith, almost.
Exactly. And Psalm 13 just cuts right through that. Yeah. David's raw honesty shows us you can bring your doubts, your fears, your anger, your despair straight to God.
And still be heard, still be held.
Yes. That kind of full transparency isn't just okay. It's actually invited. It can strengthen your faith by making it real, making it authentic. It validates your actual human experience within your relationship with God.
Absolutely. And related to that, I think it helps us acknowledge our mental and emotional fatigue.
How so?
Well, David's language, that constant taking counsel in my soul, the sorrow in my heart daily, it mirrors so closely what we might now call anxiety, maybe depression, burnout.
Yeah, that internal wrestling.
Exactly. In our world, with so much chronic stress, ongoing crises, personal griefs, this psalm gives us words, a framework for emotions that maybe we feel we have to hide.
And acknowledging them is the first step.
It is. By acknowledging those feelings, by bringing them into light before God, you actually open yourself to His presence, His care. And that itself is an act of faith, and honestly, maybe an act of obedience to caring for the soul He gave you.
That leads perfectly into the next point, which feels really key. Faith doesn't always mean feeling okay.
Say that again. That's crucial.
Right. David declares his trust before anything gets fixed. For us today, that means faith often looks like making intentional choices.
Choices like?
Like choosing to believe God's promises, even when they feel distant. Choosing to act with hope, even when you don't feel hopeful. Choosing to stay committed to prayer or community or serving others, even when your circumstances haven't changed and your feelings haven't caught up yet.
So faith becomes a verb, an action.
Yes. It strengthens faith as this conscious decision, not just a passive feeling. And it encourages that deep obedience, that commitment to trust God, regardless of immediate comfort or clear answers.
And that reframes praise too, doesn't it? We talked about praise as a path through pain. The application today is maybe to use praise as a tool, not just wait for it as a reward.
Explain that a bit more.
Well, instead of waiting until everything feels good again to be thankful or to worship, David's example encourages us to see praise as that defiant act of faith you mentioned.
Saying even now.
Exactly. Even here, especially here, I will remember what is true about God. I will declare His goodness, His faithfulness, His mercy. It's a radical act of devotion when it's hard.
And doing that actually strengthens your faith.
Profoundly. Because it shifts your focus off the overwhelming problem and onto the character of God. It reinforces His sovereignty, His love, even when everything seems chaotic or lost. It's obedience that builds resilience.
And one last application, maybe looking outwards. How does this psalm influence how we interact with others who are suffering?
That's a great point. It teaches us, I think, to respond with compassion, not just easy answers or platitudes.
Because when someone you know is asking their own version of how long will this go on, they probably don't need you to fix it or give them a theological treatise or tell them to just cheer up.
They need presence.
Yes. Presence, empathy, someone willing to sit with them in the darkness, like the psalm sits with David in his darkness. It reminds us to walk alongside people through their hard seasons without rushing them or minimizing their pain.
Which is really applying faith through love, right?
It's living out that call to love your neighbor, being truly present in their suffering. That's deep obedience, too.
Wow. So much packed into just 6 verses. It really is. Psalm 13 just captures that ache. So many of us feel sometimes waiting for God, waiting for answers, waiting for relief that just doesn't seem to come.
But it doesn't leave us there.
No, it models how to bring that ache forward. With total honesty, yes, but also with this stubborn trust, this persistent hope, even if it's just a flicker.
The wisdom is in choosing to believe God still sees you.
Even when He feels silent. Even when the darkness lingers. There's a quote I love that seems to fit here. Faith is not the absence of anguish. It's the courage to sing while waiting.
The courage to sing while waiting. That sums it up beautifully. So thinking about all this, what does it mean for you listening right now? Here's something to consider. Have you ever had a how long moment in your own life? A time where, right in the middle of the pain and the uncertainty, you made that choice, like David, to sing, to trust, even without the answer you were desperately hoping for.